start working on it. It isn't like they have a problem with every guest. It's just a particular in each case. And they're looking at me like, we are so busy now that we can add this to it.
Well, when you say working on, what is it you're wanting them to do? I'm not quite clear what you're trying to ask them to do, because it could be that it sounds like a huge project to them, and maybe it doesn't need to sound that way.
Okay, well, then maybe I'm presenting it the wrong way, because I don't think it's a huge project. It's just I'm trying to get them to understand that it's a perceived relationship. Their mind perceives this relationship as being difficult when
uh-huh.
no one else does.
Uh-huh.
And they're looking at me like, and I'm supposed to change this in the middle of this craziness?
Seems like it's asking a lot, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. They seem to think it's a lot.
Yeah. Do you have regular meetings, 10 or 15 minute meetings or whatever with your staff on a regular basis?
No.
Well, this might be helpful, Chris, and this is the way that I suggest a lot of managers and supervisors operate with people, that they start making education about relationships and about how people function a part of brief meetings. They don't have to be long. You know, a half an hour is a lot of time. And you pick a piece, and you want to teach generically, not specifically. And here's what I mean by that. You want to teach them about the whole nature of perception, that as an example, what you perceive, what any human being perceives, is a function of the kind of thinking they have. It's through their own mindset, their own world of personal thought, so that we're each creating our own reality within our heads using the power of thought moment to moment. Now, this is something that you have to see for yourself, and I don't know you well enough yet to know how deeply you see that. But if you see that, then you can talk about it to them. And what you do is plant seeds, Chris. And you have to take it away from the personal. If you tell Joe or Ann or whoever it is that, they've got a problem with a customer and they need to fix it, they don't know how to, because they're looking at it as an insoluble problem. Like, the solution they would come up with is, I don't want to deal with this person anymore. And that's, of course, not very satisfactory in the hospitality industry. So you want to be teaching them general principles about perception and about the power of thought, and then let them come to the conclusion when they run into one of these so-called difficult people that this has everything to do with their perception. Does this make any sense, what I'm saying?
Yeah, it does. But then I'm afraid that I'm going to get back to one of the older lessons, which is don't be a problem solver.
Oh, for you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a difference here, you see, between you're solving individual problems and you're teaching your staff how to solve problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very appropriate for you to be teaching them how to solve problems, how to see problems in a wiser perspective. Because a problem is only a situation to which a person doesn't see a solution. If it wasn't a problem and if there wasn't a solution, then it would be a condition and there isn't any sense in discussing it.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's a problem, then there is a solution, and you need to help them see how to access a state of mind where they see solutions. And a big part of that is this perception. Now, there's a tape that I made, I don't know, a long time ago, called Dealing with Difficult People. And I've gone through this whole thing in some depth, and that I can't even remember all that I said because I did it several years back, but the whole point of it is that everybody is difficult to somebody different. The thing you were saying in the beginning, that it's not one person who's just difficult for everybody.
Uh-huh.
There's always somebody for whom that person is not difficult. And the reason that's true is that that particular person doesn't get triggered by their habits, that person's behavior or habits or whatever. And they usually have a wiser perspective. They realize, gee, the fact that I don't like this person or I'm reacting to this person is something in my thinking. This person is doing the best they know how to do. Maybe they've got a bad morning or they've had a bad day at work or, whatever it is that's resulting in their being in an upset, grumpy state, and they're being nasty or lashing out or demanding or, you know, all the different kinds of wonderful things that people have trouble with. So that's the general direction, Chris, that I would suggest to you, that you start teaching, to the extent that you're able to, teach your staff in brief sessions about these kinds of things.
Okay.
So do you feel like you could, in fact, have little sessions about a specific thing like that? Do you feel grounded enough in that kind of understanding?
I feel comfortable enough doing that. I have a degree in nursing, so I ended up with a degree in human psychology, and I don't have a problem with it, but then I keep getting back to, I can try it and see what happens, and that's just what I need to do.
Well, one thing that can help you, I know Bill's promised to send you a copy of my new book, and there's about 8 or 9 chapters in the beginning about the foundation of this understanding. I think you might find that helpful. Goes a lot into listening. The whole notion of listening is to me fundamental to improving relationships or, quote, working on relationships, unquote. And really all a person has to do to improve any relationship is to start to learn to listen instead of to judge all the time.
It's Kevin here. I think listening is also asking the right questions. We recently did an employee survey or a team member survey. I have 35 employees right now.
Can you speak up just a little bit, Kev?
I think one of the things to listening to them is asking the right questions as well.
Uh-huh.
We recently did a team member survey. Out of 35 employees, I got 11 surveys back. I don't know if that's good or bad. But I found two areas that I think I need to work on. One of them is communication.
Uh-huh.
We don't communicate ideas all that well. And the other one is pay level. But, the perception is that they're underpaid. And that, quite frankly, I'm embarrassed by the wages that are in our industry. But, you know, you have to be competitive. And I've done a survey of other restaurant wages, and we're actually higher than average. I don't know how to change that perception with people other than to say that, you know, this is what you get in other companies. But communications, I guess, is the strength or the downfall of any company, and I thought I did it well, and I think I have to do it better.
So was the indication, Kevin, that you picked up that you weren't listening well or understanding them, or what was the gist, do you think, of?
I think if we have a marketing program coming out, I think they would like a little bit more information on it. And I think sometimes I assume they know how to handle it or whatever. But, you know, I do a lot of direct response marketing, and stuff comes out. They know how to do it. I think they want to know when I do it or something like that.
Uh-huh. So they want to feel kind of on the inside of what's happening.
Yes, yeah.
So that's something you could do pretty easily, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
But it's something I thought I was doing well to begin with. I have a manager's meeting every 2 weeks, and it's not really a manager. It's maybe more advisors. It's the people that have been with me the longest that have the most responsibility in the restaurant. And then we meet with the whole team once a month. And, you know, I make it optional. Some people don't bother coming in, and some people do. I usually have about an 80% turnout factor for a Saturday morning meeting at 8 o'clock.
That's pretty good, I'd say.
Yeah. I guess they're saying they need more communication from me, but I don't know where to start.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that I find when I'm working with organizations or individuals, when people say that there's not good communication, two things are at work. One seems to be that they don't feel understood. And that's about, if I use the two different words, listening and hearing, it's about hearing really what someone's saying, understanding it, grasping it, so that they feel certain you know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So as an example, let's say people say, okay, we're not being paid enough. Well, I don't know that that's what they're saying. They may or may not know that their wages are better than most places in town, but they may be saying, you know, I don't feel valued. I don't feel appreciated. It may be that what they're telling you when they answer the question, I don't feel I'm paid enough, is, you know, hey, boss, you don't tell me I'm doing a good job once in a while, or, you know, that kind of thing, showing me a little appreciation. And that's the kind of thing that comes out in really what I call insightful or reflective listening, so that you listen in a neutral stance. One of the problems that bosses have universally is they tend to want to hear what they want to hear and not hear what people are really communicating. And I run into this very frequently. So it's just an exercise in taking a neutral stance, not getting defensive, not getting your feelings hurt, not getting in judgment, and doing your very best to hear and then feedback and say, okay, this is what I'm hearing. Is this correct? If it isn't correct, help me here. You know, steer me in the right direction because I really want to get this. And when people feel like they've been heard and understood, two things happen. One is a relationship feels closer. And the second is they feel better appreciated, and very often they'll say, well, okay, you know, Kevin, I know you can't pay us more given all these things, but I really appreciate the fact that you took the time to listen, and I think the real message here is, you know, that I want to feel valued and appreciated as an employee. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I remember, more than 10 years ago, I got into the habit of just writing a thank you note to an employee at least once a week, and if you can't find somebody doing a great job once a week, then you're not really looking. And I've got away from that, and maybe that's what I should get back into.
So would you say, Kevin, that you've kind of gotten caught up in things?
Yeah. Just in the, you know, trying to get the business growing. And I think my morale dropped this summer. We had a terrible summer. We had road construction in front of our restaurant, and you know, just down the road from us in Toronto, they had the SARS scare and the mad cow scare, and it's affected our business like you wouldn't believe.
Sure.
We've dropped down 20% in sales just for the summer. We're back up to where we were. September's been pretty good, but morale has dropped, and people are, you know, bitching and complaining, and you know, I've tried to explain it to them, but all of a sudden, when you get a couple of busy weeks, then the problems seem to go.
Well, one of the questions, and I think one of the things that any manager or owner can kind of keep an eye on is, are people having fun?
Yeah.
And if they're not having fun, they're usually getting serious. And you really need to step in. And, you know, there's no formula, but if you know that's what you want to do, you'll find a way to lighten things up. Sometimes a piece of humor here and there. Sometimes just letting them know, look, you know, this is happening. It happens once in a while. We'll recover. It'll be fine. Whatever it is you need to do to lighten it up and let them have fun on the job. That, to me, a place, especially eating establishments, where the staff is having fun is a place I like to go. I want it to be lighthearted. I want people to be cheerful and not just trying to be pleasant, but enjoying themselves, having a good time, because it's infectious.
Okay. I think we have a certain amount of fun here. We've got some pretty humorous managers on board. They try to lighten it up, but there are times when, you know, one person comes in and it brings the mood down for everybody.
Uh-huh.
I guess maybe we should just hit it head on when we see it and try and, I don't know, move it out for that evening or somewhere else.
Well, I think that's a wise thing to do because, as you say, you know, it's like one rotten apple in the barrel can start to affect everything.
Yeah.
And I think as a manager, it's extremely important to watch the tone, the level of well-being and state of mind, if you will, people, because a person, and people are human beings. I mean, people go up and down, and small variations aren't a problem. But if somebody's really funked out, then I think you do. You need to say, you know, and you can see this just by kind of keeping your eyes open. And I think it really makes sense to just get them aside and find out what's going on, do some listening, and maybe just that process will help them come back up. And if not, maybe you can work out a way where you can say, you know, why don't you just take the night off and have some fun, and we'll see you tomorrow or whatever.
Good.
Did we have somebody else slip on the line?
I don't know whether there's any more than Kevin and Chris online.
Is Chris, are you still here?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I thought I heard another click while Kevin was talking. That's...
I guess when you get down to it, you're dealing with, you know, a number of staff, and it's all personalities, and they're all different. You have to play with each personality in a different way.
Well, you do. In other words, you interact with people in a way that's appropriate to them, in a way which makes sense to them. But there's also a level that's common to all people. I mean, we're all human beings. You know, we're human beings, and then we have our personalities. That's kind of the way we present ourselves in the world. But when you touch people at the level of humanity, it's universal. So you can kind of steer in that direction. And when you're talking to somebody that way, or, you know, doing a lot of listening, you'll reach that level. And it's much easier to get through to them with such situations as, you know, you have to understand that if you're in a funk, you're not going to do good work here tonight. You're going to affect the business. Your tips aren't going to be what they should be. And it just doesn't make sense. Now, I understand if it's just too big a load for you and you can't drop it tonight, that's the way it is. But this is my position. I have to pay attention to that. And that's one of the things that you know, you can talk to people about in general when you have meetings. To be a topic, as I was suggesting with Chris, that you could talk about the impact of state of mind, their state of mind on the customer, the guest, and because a lot of times people don't understand it. I remember one of my favorite, and I've told Bill this story, but it's one of my favorite restaurants where I used to live in San Rafael. My wife and I went in, and they were usually fast and fun, and you know, this night the waitress came by the table and literally slammed the menus on the table and went off. And I saw her being snappy at another table, and I thought, you know, this is really unusual. This is not why we come here. And we debated about just leaving. But when she came back, it just occurred to me in the moment, and I just said, you know, looks like you're having a tough night tonight. And she let down. She just, it's like all the air came out of her sails, and she totally changed, and she said, oh, man, she said, one of the gals called in sick, and we're just over our heads here. She said, I'm so uptight. And I said, well, just relax, you know, because we're not in a hurry, and it doesn't really matter, and it's more important that you have a good time, and it'll be fine. And, you know, all of a sudden, she was very pleasant to us and carried that on with the rest of her customers. Well, I did that as a customer, but you can see I'm pointing to the fact that a manager could do that probably more effectively.
Yeah.
It's the difference when, and we've talked about this some, the separating the, you start to see the thinking and not the behavior. What you start to see is that something's on your mind, you know, something's on her mind, something's bugging her, something's weighing her down, and you deal with that rather than what they're doing. I mean, if you jumped on the waitress that Robert was talking about, if you jumped on her about don't slam the menus on the table, that obviously is not going to accomplish much.
Right. That's a little more resentment toward the boss.
Yeah, right. I mean, do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, so that's the point, and it's really about, and all the things that we've been talking about forever is really to sort of nudge you around to a point where you just see it differently. And when you see it differently, you deal with it differently. And when you deal with it differently, you get radically different results. And it just seems like, well, of course. it doesn't seem like any big deal once you see it. And once you see it, it really isn't any big deal.
Yeah.
And when you reach the person, like I just happened to be able to do at that moment on a human being level, you connect. It's like an old friend whispered in your ear. And it's like, okay, you understand. You see what's going on. And I don't have to keep up this behavior. That's not how she normally was. So.
Yeah.
So it makes a lot of sense. These things, and I think, you know, I know you've talked about this a lot, Bill, in your newsletters and things, that, and I'm sure in your programs, but about having an ongoing regimen of training, either very formal or not, but always having some piece of teaching. And I think it makes a lot of sense. You can take little bitty pieces and talk about them. And it's really impactful. You give people a little piece and let them sit with it and let them see about listening, for example. And I, from my experience as a customer, I see the servers who are listening to me and connecting with me and those who are just going through the routine. And I can tell you it makes a difference. I tip bigger for the people who are
absolutely
with me.
You know, the best training video for that is Bill's, The Power of Presence.
Oh, I'm sure.
I show it to all of my service staff, and that seems to turn on a light for everybody.
Oh, that's great.
It works really well.
That's right on your money.
I appreciate
that. The whole series of tapes works really well, but that one, Power of Presence, the light goes on and goes, oh, yeah.
Well, and then the trick is that as long, you know, if you deal with them that way, it makes it a lot easier for them to deal with the guests that way.
Yeah.
But
I didn't realize you had a video about that, Bill. That's great. That's right on the money.
Well, I have that. There's a staff program that I've done for quite a while called What Every Service Pro Should Know About People, and I put it on video a few years ago. And that's one of the pieces that if they got nothing other than that, it would make a huge difference in their income.
It's also that, and I guess I'm sure this is in your video, but it's worth reminding that for every moment you're present, you can't be stressed. It's impossible to be stressed in the moment. So as people are more and more present, they are less and less experiencing stress. So it's kind of an instant de-stressor, because stress comes from either ruminating over the past or projecting some insecurity into the future. You're not in the past or in the future. You have to be in the moment, and so you can't have that experience of stress. And an emergency is a perfect example. When people find themselves like in an automotive emergency, or a fire breaks out, or whatever the emergency, whatever they were stewing about or troubled about or stressed about, just all vanishes instantly. And you're highly present, and you're doing everything you know how to do to handle that situation.
Now, Chris?
Yes.
Is any of this helpful for you?
Oh, yes. And maybe what I need to do is go back and reteach Power of Presence, and maybe they'll calm down enough to listen to something new. But, when we're going through we're doing all the Rory Fat stuff, and we're doing a lot of direct marketing. We're doing the Year of the Guest. And so they're inundated with new information constantly. And maybe I'm feeding them too much, too fast.
It's possible. I mean, that's something that only you can judge.
Right.
But I think that, Robert's idea of let's do a little bit, if you give them a little taste at regular staff meetings, it's, sometimes we just get impatient and say, okay, here's the new program, and throw a whole bunch of information at them, and it just seems like it's too much to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Where a little nudge here and a little nudge there, and gradually they move to a different place and don't even notice it.
Well, I think it's also very helpful if you help people understand the point. So, what is the point of this program? What is the point of that program? And it goes beyond...
And get agreement from them before you start.
Well, yeah. And see, it goes beyond just getting business. mean, obviously you're hoping to get business and generate revenues. But there's a point beyond that. There's something else that they can relate to. Because in a way, I know this is a little crass to say, but in a way, people don't really care whether you're making money or not. They care if they're making money.
Correct.
So, you know, it's like, okay, what is the point of this? Well, the point of this is we want to bring other guests with them. That's the point of this program. Or we want people to know that we have the most interesting menu that there is out there. You know what? I'm just making it up. But just whatever it is the point of your program so that they get the whole gist of it.
Well, they need some sort of a context to put it in. I think that becomes half of it, because particularly when you're dealing with new ideas, if they don't know sort of where this fits, then it's a whole lot more confusing. So
my staff gives me enough feedback to know that they like the changes. They like the changes in business. They like the fact that they're making more money. They like their job.
Yeah.
It's just they like change, but I think they're starting to feel like enough's enough.
Well, then maybe, I mean, sometimes less is more.
Excuse me?
Sometimes less can be more.
Exactly.
And it may be time just to say, well, let's take a break for a little bit. Let's work on this. Get this down. Because part of it is keeping them in a state of mind where they're receptive to new things. And too much too fast, even if it's great stuff, too much too fast, it can just wear them down.
Well, thank you for your insight.
I mean, that'd be my take, Robert. You may have some.
Yeah, no, I think that's fine. I think if you sense in your employees that they're overwhelmed, they're just, you know, they're spinning, then to me that says that you've got a climate that's running too fast. And I don't mean that the servers don't walk fast. I mean that mentally people are spinning. And this is really an invitation for big trouble. Because when people are spinning, it's extremely difficult to be present. It's easy to get stressed. It's easy to get a feeling of overwhelm. So you have to be able to really be sensitive about that and hit it at the core, which is getting people to quiet down and to calm down. And that may sound antithetical to the fact that you have a rapid business, because I understand that the food industry is a rapidly moving business. But you don't, at least I'm going to say this, Bill, and you can jump on me if you want. I don't think you want your customers to feel rushed. I don't think you want them to feel hectic. I think you want them to feel welcome and a certain amount of calm.
Well, you don't want them to feel that the face of your operation is more important than them having a good time.
Exactly.
Correct.
I have to tell you a story that I heard recently that I thought was really excellent. This manager in an engineering firm had a big government contract, and he took over 9 months into the contract, took over this, and he looked at everything, and basically they had left, of their deliverables, they had left most everything to be done at the end. So they were running out of time. They were already almost over budget, and there was an prayer that they were going to come in on time or in budget. So this manager turned out to be quite a savvy person, and he gathered the troops together, and he said, I'll tell you what. He said, there's no way in the world that you're going to make the budget or the schedule, so forget about it. He said, you guys are stressing yourself out. You're worried. You're just making yourself sick. I want you to relax, have a good time, do the best you can, and enjoy yourself. If you're not having fun, then you're off track. And I'll take the heat when this thing doesn't work out. I won't pass it on to you. It'll be my problem. So he got challenged a number of times and held fast to his position. He said, I want you to have fun. If you're not having fun, you're missing the point. Well, as the story ended, 3 months later, they had not only caught up, but they finished on time, and they finished within budget. And the point of the story clearly is that if people are having fun, they're at their best. They're relaxed, but they're on top of things. They're insightful. They can connect rapidly. They make smart decisions. And they love coming to work. And so as a result of that, instead of feeling stressed, instead of complaining about all the stuff that was going on and worrying, you know, worry is just sucks the energy out of people. You know, instead of doing all that, people are saying, oh, well, we're supposed to be having fun. Okay, great. I'm having a good time. And they got into it. And as a result, productivity soared. And that's not unusual.
Yeah, I've told a couple of long-term members of my team that if they're not having fun anymore, they should be thinking about maybe moving on to something else. I think they reflect on it for a while and realize that, yeah, I am having fun.
They yeah.
Be more energized after that.
Of course, the irony of it is that if they aren't having fun and it is in their thinking and they move on, they're going to have the same problem someplace
yeah.
else.
Every place you go, there you are.
That's right. That kind of thing. So, we didn't end up with anybody else on the line, Bill, did we?
Apparently not. I thought I heard somebody else click in, but apparently not.
Well, maybe they clicked in and it was a wrong number, and they said, "What is that?"
They clicked in and said, "These guys are too weird for me."
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it feels like it's almost private consulting today.
Well, it, I mean, it really is. Yeah. That's the thing that I always surprised me about the teleconferences is there aren't more people that take time to call in because it's exactly that.
Yeah.
You know, one-on-one, you know, get your questions answered directly kind of stuff, and the price is right. So.
Exactly.
Well, you know, Bill, people are too busy.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of the hardest lessons I've had to learn over the years is that if I'm too busy, then I'm really getting lost.
Yeah. Can't tell you anything now. I'm working on my sales plan.
Exactly.
Oh, terrific.
Where are you located, Chris?
Northern Iowa.
Oh.
Right in the middle of the country.
I think the only...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the only place I ever went was Fort Dodge.
Oh, we're about 90 miles from Fort Dodge.
Oh, okay.
We're sitting in a pretty nice place. We're not being affected by any of the scares, any of the terrorism. Corporate America isn't here. And so we're just sitting there clicking along, and I have a lot of compassion for the rest of them that have to deal with all the
ick
that's going on right now.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Well, anything else on any other questions for Robert while you have the chance?
I don't have any left. It'll take a while to, you know, sort this all out in my head, and then maybe your book will help us a lot. I found the last time we got a book was what, Building the Dream Workforce.
Mm-hmm.
It really put everything into perspective after that, and it was a great read.
That's great.
I'm looking forward to Robert's book.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you enjoy it. It you know, the metaphor, the subject matter is high performance meetings, which will help you in general. But the real meat of it is in the first 12 chapters or so, 15 chapters. I've forgotten. Which I set the stage of the foundation of this understanding and the dynamics of relationships and so on. And I think you see that applies to anybody in any industry, any place, including private life. So
great.
I'm hoping you'll enjoy it. I had a good time writing it anyway.
That's great.
Well, and Robert's also going to be at the Super Summit. And we're going to be going into some of these things and
that's still in January, Bill?
That's in 12th and 13th of January at Disneyland.
You have a date. I hadn't even...
Ah. Oh, well, I'm sorry. I thought I said a note out about that.
Well, you might have, but I went through this horrible agony in the last week of scrubbing my hard drive and adding Windows XP and installing all my new programs. And it's possible I lost something in the shuffle.
Well, you like XP.
Yeah, well, so far it looks good.
But yeah, 12th and 13th.
Okay. It'll be on my calendar immediately.
Make a note.
Absolutely.
Anyway, if everybody's got questions answered, we'll let you get back to your day.
Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for joining us, Kevin and Chris.
Thank you for your time.
I appreciate it.
Appreciated.
And hopefully our paths will cross again sometime soon.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, gang.
Thanks, Bye-bye. Bill.